Whether you're looking for answers to specific life questions or seeking to become the best version of you possible, welcome to the Mental Breakdown and Psych Reg podcast, where we offer insight, information, and strategies based upon research and years of practice as clinical psychologists. So sit back, have a listen, and get connected with our hosts, Dr. Bernie Wilkinson and Dr. Richard Marshall. Welcome back, Richard. Today we're going to talk about a topic that we really haven't discussed much here on the podcast, and that is the topic of dementia. Dementia is a psychological, not really psychological as much as it is neurological condition that is primarily seen in the elderly as we get older.
Right.
This is a, we are at risk for this condition. We don't really typically see it in people who are much younger. Though, technically speaking, there's nothing that could prevent it from happening.
Right.
There are people. It does happen. Yeah,
there are people in their 40s who develop dementia.
So this is an article that was written for psychreg.org, our blog post site, psychreg.org. And the title is Dementia, Myths, Risks, and Treatments.
Right. Interesting topic, because we tend to think that everybody will get dementia.
Right.
Dementia is a disease. It's a, as you say, it's neurobiological. It's a disease process. When I teach this in my classes, when people talk about it, I say, no, what you have to understand is dementia is a disease process. It's not a normal biological thing. It's a disease, okay? And I think that's the first distinction that we have to make, is that it is a disease process.
And again, so what we, what we're working to do here is differentiating between dementia and cognitive decline, sort of general cognitive decline.
That, associated with aging.
That does happen with aging, absolutely. But that's different than dementia.
And you and I aren't that old yet, so we're not experiencing that. Well, one of
what were you going to say? I forgot.
No,
where are you going with this?
Right, because I am old. Okay, but and there is, there's a physiologic decline. Our bodies. You know, with age, there's a physio. I mean, by the time we're in our 40s, most of us have to wear some type of glasses. Some people have to have hearing aids. Some people, you know, your skin dries out and things start to... So there are these physiologic changes that occur with age, and the brain is no different. The brain also changes with age.
Absolutely.
But dementia is a disease process that, that changes, rapidly changes the brain. And that's what we're, that's what we want to talk about here.
Now, there's several different types of dementia. That's the first thing that we're going to mention here. Alzheimer's is the most prevalent.
It's the most and the most common. It's the one we hear about the most often.
But there are others. There's one called frontotemporal dementia. There's dementia associated with Parkinson's. There's dementia associated with HIV.
And people forget about Parkinson's. We think of the motor dysfunction, but you don't think about the dementia, that accompanies Parkinson's, which may be the larger of the two problems, is the dementia that occurs. There's vascular dementia.
Which has to do with blood flow.
In the Lewy bodies that can attack the brain. And these are just a few of a long list of dementing disorders that occur in man.
And some of the, you know, you probably heard much about the new research looking at the consequences of repeated concussions.
And that
is another, getting to be another type of dementia.
When the you mentioned HIV, because that's another one that we don't typically think about. But when we first studied HIV, when the infection first hit, in particularly in South Florida, which was one of the places where they had an epidemic, and the experts at the time were saying the problem with this disease is the dementing, the dementing aspects of it. He said people are going to get this disease, not realize they have it, and they're going to develop dementia. And we're not, but those were in the years before we knew very little about it. But there is a dementing aspect to a dementia aspect to HIV.
So in this article, she identifies four myths. And so and those four myths are, they are real concerns, real beliefs that I think most people hold.
And for people who are just beginning to deal with a relative who might, you suspect, might have dementia, These are really, really helpful, right. Really important, these four myths.
So we'll go through the four myths, and then we'll talk about the treatment part, because that part's important. Right. But the four myths are that it's a normal part of aging.
Right.
It's
That's not. Myth number one. It's not a normal part of aging.
Right. Number two is that as you get older, you're going to get it.
That's right. That there's an inevitability that we're all going to get dementing diseases, disorders, as we age.
Right.
That simply isn't true. And I love the data that she puts in here because it's so helpful. That after age 65, the risk of a person developing dementia doubles
every five years.
Mm-hmm. So you're 65. By the time you're 70, the risk doubles. By the time you're 75, it doubles again.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so that's true, but...
However, only 5% of the population get it.
So let's repeat that. This is only going to occur in 5% of the population.
Right.
Okay, 95% of people, this is not going to happen.
Right.
Okay,
right.
So keep that in mind.
Right. The third myth is that there's nothing you can do about it.
Right.
And again, that is just simply not true. We know that there are things that... decrease your risk of getting it, even if you have a genetic predisposition for it. We know that there's a decreased risk. One of the things that we used to talk about early on in research, and this was maybe 15, 20 years ago, is smoking.
Right.
It was fascinating. But the not-so-funny, ironic joke was that it's because, you know, you struggled and died from lung cancer before you could develop it. But no, what it really is that we didn't know it at the time, I don't think, but the nicotine in the cigarettes sort of created a buffer, a protective factor.
Right.
We could do a week's worth or more on nicotine. But again, there are some things that we can do to decrease our risk for developing dementia.
If you smoke... First of all, you're going to have oxygen depletion or oxygen deprivation or oxygen insufficiency. That's one problem. And second, you could increase your chances of vascular disease.
Right.
And vascular dementia is one of the dementing disorders.
Right. You may not get Alzheimer's.
But you're going to get it.
But you may get something else.
Some type of dementing disorder. Repeated head injuries.
Right.
Talked about that. Alcohol. Abuse, where you get Korsakoff's syndrome.
Right.
That's reversible, but only if you stop drinking.
Right.
Okay, but that's a vitamin K deficiency. It's not really because of the alcohol. So there are protein deficiencies significant amounts of time of being malnourished.
Right.
It doesn't happen, you know, usually it doesn't happen in this country, but in other parts of the world. Where food deprivation is a significant issue, you can have protein insufficiencies that lead to dementing disorders.
There are also ways to prevent it through just healthy dieting.
Yeah.
Because, you know, there are... The field is moving in the direction of, of referring to Alzheimer's specifically as diabetes type 3. Because there is such a strong correlation between Alzheimer's and diabetes.
Right.
That it appears as though there's some relationship between that insulin resistance and Alzheimer's and the development of Alzheimer's because of the way that the plaques and tangles develop in the brain.
And so you have our three, the trinity for us, our
diet,
nutrition, exercise, and sleep.
Right.
Okay. And those three, once again, those three play a role here. So living a healthier lifestyle, you know, what you eat, that you exercise, are preventive, play a preventive role.
Right. And the final myth that she talks about is that that it is reversible.
Yeah, that people think there's a cure.
Right,
not. You see TV ads about different types of medications.
Right.
And those medications, like all medications, can treat the symptoms.
Right.
Okay. Most medications provide symptomatic relief, and such is the case here, where you can get some of the symptoms. It's not going to change your brain.
And the symptomatic things that are addressed are more of the irritability and agitation. Right. It's not going to necessarily, increase your memory.
It's not going to increase memory.
there are some medications now that are slowing the process, but nothing has yet been developed that reverses it.
Right. That's what we're looking.
When it comes to Alzheimer's, it's damage. It's brain damage.
It's brain damage. Cells are being lost. I mean, right. If you look at the brains of people with Alzheimer's, you can see that you can just look at it. You don't need a microscope.
Right.
You can see the damage in that. That's why we call it a disorder or a disease. It's not normal. Aging doesn't look like that.
Right. So when we get into, so this kind of leads us into, you know, to be diagnosed with dementia requires an evaluation by a neurologist. Sometimes it requires neuroimaging. Mm-hmm. Sometimes it requires testing by a neuropsychologist. We've done a lot of that testing here in the office, where we look at memory and executive functioning skills and sort of daily living abilities, independent skills, and things like that. Mm-hmm. But you take all of that information, combine it, and that's what gives us the opportunity to make a diagnosis.
That's right. It's a comprehensive assessment.
But for the most part, you know, and I believe that it's still the case, to really confirm, like a confirmatory, yes, this is, you know, Alzheimer's, that can't happen until an autopsy.
Right.
You know, because they have to look at the brain and look at, under microscopes and stuff, to see the plaques and tangles and all of that, that really confirms that Alzheimer's is what's going on. Mm-hmm. So it's, we're still at that point.
Right. But the important thing here is that be aware of the myths.
Right.
And it's a comprehensive assessment. It's not because you lost some memory functions.
Right.
We all lose memory functions. That starts in your 30s.
Right.
I mean, you don't have to wait till you're 60 or 70. Memory loss begins in our 30s.
Right.
So that's not a huge issue.
Right. Mm-hmm. And so then we finally get to treatment.
But there are things we can do.
Right.
Right.
Medicinally, there are some medications that affect acetylcholine, basically, which is it's a neurotransmitter, but it's a neurotransmitter that's found throughout our body.
Right.
It's not just biology is so fantastic, guys.
Acetylcholine.
Because acetylcholine
get going on a tangent here.
Acetylcholine is also what makes your muscles move.
Right.
So it's important in memory. It's important in muscle movement. It's
important in reading. It is important in reading.
And memory. Yeah, it's important in all those things.
Yeah.
And a subtype, this kind of ties back to what we said a minute ago, so it's not completely a tangent. Nicotine is a subtype of acetylcholine.
That's right.
So yes, your brain is made to receive, it has receptor sites for nicotine.
Right. That's why we like to smoke cigarettes. That's why tobacco is so addictive.
Right.
Because we have nicotinic receptors in our brain that likes it.
And before you think, well, that's why we should avoid it so much. We should certainly avoid smoking and all that kind of stuff, because that's bad for you, not necessarily because of the nicotine, but because of all the other stuff. You're breathing
poison.
Smoke into your lungs. I mean, that should be a no-brainer.
Firefighters use masks.
Right. That's not rocket science. But we can't demonize nicotine, because there's a lot of neuroregenerative properties associated with nicotine. There's a lot of really important things that come from nicotine, and so it has such a bad rap. But is that the tangent you were talking about?
Well, this is a bit of a tangent, but I could go on another one, but I won't, about cigars. I won't.
You won't?
I won't.
All right.
Maybe that's why I won't.
But there are medications that work with acetylcholine and you know, help boost the amount of acetylcholine in our brain. And that seems to, again, at best, slow the process.
It's going to help a little bit with function.
Right.
What you need to understand is the medications are going to sort of facilitate function. They're not going to change structure.
Right.
You're not going to grow new neurons. Mm-hmm. You're not going to change the brain in any structural way. Okay. So we can't expect that.
Right.
Functions may, and symptomatic relief. You know, we know that with dementing disorders, you have increased anxiety, you have increased depression. And so we can treat those things.
Right.
Some of these medications will treat those things.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah. But. And then there's lifestyle things that we've already kind of referred to. Your diet, exercising, staying cognitively engaged. You know, there's some research to suggest that thinking, you know, problem solving, you know, doing those kinds of things help fend off the consequences or the risk of some of these dementias.
You have to keep your brain active.
It's a muscle.
It's well, it's you not know, a you have to keep your joints active. You have to keep your brain active. You have to keep your internal organs active. The more active you are, mentally, intellectually, cognitively, the more of these functions you're going to maintain.
Right.
If you stop moving, for example, if you're sitting, and we're going to talk about sitting.
That's the next podcast.
You know, later. But if you sit too long, your joints are going to atrophy.
Right.
You have, your body is meant to be used.
Right.
And you have to keep using it.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So that cognitive engagement in your environment with other people is really important to help prevent or decrease.
The real enemy here is social isolation.
Right.
You know, what you want to do, the worst thing you can do is to live alone.
Right.
And of course, that's what happens with the elderly. Married couple, for example, the children are gone, and then you have married couples, and one partner dies, and then you're alone.
Right.
Okay. And you can be alone for 20 years.
Right.
I mean, we noticed a decline in my grandmother when she lived alone.
Mm-hmm.
She lived by herself in a small house for several years, and we noticed a rapid decline. It wasn't because she had Alzheimer's. It was because she was socially isolated and had stopped doing the things that she had been doing for 80 years.
Yeah, absolutely. So yes, there's not a cure, but there are things that decrease its impact and decrease your risk.
Right.
So,
and you know, we talk about a person-centered approach or a multidisciplinary approach when we're dealing with this. If for those of you who are caregivers or you have a relative who has this, you have to think in a multidisciplinary way.
Right.
There are medications. You have to stay active, avoid social isolation, occupational therapy, physical therapy. Surround this person with the supports that they need to remain as active as possible.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So you're not going to cure it. There's many, many things you can do.
Right. Check out the article. The link is in the show notes, and they have links to all kinds of different things, different research organizations and other places where you can get more information. Information is important.
So. Right. And remember the caregivers.
Right.
If you're a caregiver, be very, very careful because 75% of caregivers are going to struggle with the tasks. And the younger you are, the harder the struggle is, you know, because it's harder to understand this at 30 than it is at 60.
Right.
So be careful if you're a caregiver and take care of yourself.
Absolutely. So, all right, that is it. Make sure you're following us on iTunes and Twitter and YouTube and subscribe to all of the different ways that you can get the podcast and share it with your friends and family and people that you like and people that you don't like.
That would be great. Share it with people you don't like.
Yeah, why not?
I don't have any people I don't like.
And then we can... Man, that threw me off. But definitely follow us. Write a review on iTunes. That'd be great. Or rate us at least so that other people can help find us. We really enjoy the conversations that we have on YouTube.
Yeah, I like those
that engagement.
That we're getting,
You can also check out our Patreon page, patreon.com/thementalbreakdown. It's a great way if you like what we're doing and you are as eager as we are at getting at some of the additional things that we hope to do. It's a great way to just kind of support us a little bit. Everything that we get from Patreon goes directly into sort of building the podcast and building what we're trying to do with the podcast and our talks and all the videos that we're trying to build. We have a lot of classes and things like that anticipated, and so we just need the support to be able to get the help that we need to find the time. So check that out, patreon.com/thementalbreakdown. All right, that is it for today. Until next time, stay happy, stay healthy, and forget to be afraid.